Welcome to the Everyone's a Critic Movie Review Podcast. I'm your co-host, Bob Zarrell. With me, as always, is professional film critic Sean Patrick. Visit us at ihatecritics.net, everyonesacriticpodcast.com, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Our handle is CriticsPod. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Alexa, YouTube, Ghana, all your podcatchers. Subscribe to the show, rate and review the show. It does help us out, you know, getting in all the algorithms that are out there. We, like I said, we're on YouTube. If you want to, we live stream there. So if you want to follow there, click on the button. You'll get notified when we're live. We don't have a set schedule because we have jobs and other things besides this podcast. So it does move around. So if you want to be notified and watch us live, just click on that notification button and you'll get notified whenever we're live. This is episode 464. Normally don't write that down, but I did this time. So actually, I've 463 times I've never written it down. So I did this time. We have our Patreon page, patreon.com/criticspod. It's the best way to help support the podcast. And then our TeePublic page, if you click on the right hand corner of the ihatecritics.net, you can get a link to it. Or go to TeePublic and search Everyone's a Critic Movie Review Podcast, and you should be able to find our stuff. Today, I'm not wearing a TeePublic shirt. I apologize. It's my Big Lebowski shirt. Where do we go? Just jump right into it, I guess. We don't really... Am I forgetting anything?
No, not really. I don't have any news or anything, so...
Yeah, so let's just jump right into the podcast and talk about Soul. It's a couple... few weeks old now.
Yeah, we finally catch up to this one. Soul is the latest from Pixar and Disney, and features the voices of Jamie Foxx and Tina Fey, directed by Pete Docter. And it tells the story of a jazz musician who finally gets his big break to play with this jazz artist that he respects and part of a jazz quartet. But he also has also been offered the opportunity to become a full-time teacher, a music teacher, and get benefits and have, you know, security, which is also nice as well. He doesn't really like that job, though, because he wants to play live, and this is his big opportunity. And just before he's about to get that big opportunity, he steps into a manhole. What is it called?
Manhole.
And he falls to his death. He ends up on this escalator headed towards heaven. He manages to jump off of that and ends up in this place where souls are born. And that's where he encounters Tina Fey's character. And she's a soul that doesn't want to be born. She doesn't want to go to Earth. And he's assigned to her as a mentor because they've mistaken him for somebody else. And he shows her what life is about. And she shows him how to get back to his body and potentially get back to Earth. And it's all about learning how to respect life and respect what's good about your life and respect what's good about life in general. And that's really what's so moving and inspiring about this movie. On top of the fantastic animation, this is a gorgeous movie, just absolutely beautiful film. And then you don't expect Jamie Foxx and Tina Fey to have chemistry, but they do. They've got a really good chemistry together. They've got a good solid relationship. I think a lot of that has to do with a really great script that's very smart and well thought out. It's got good gags to it, some clever twists and turns, and I really enjoyed Soul a lot. And I'd heard that some people say that this is lesser Pixar. I completely disagree. I think this is one of the top tier Pixar. I think this is classic, you know, Pete Docter Pixar.
Is it possible, because it was streaming, I don't know, that's why they called it lesser Pixar, just because of the reputation of not being in theaters? Or did it go to theaters? Or
I don't know if it went to theaters or not. I don't think it did. I think they went directly to Disney Plus on this one. I think the reputation just comes from comparisons to Inside Out, because it is so, has a similar theme about identity and about life and so on. And I think that's more of the reason why people have said, you know, made that comparison. Plus, it has the same director.
Is Inside Out considered lesser Pixar?
No. Inside Out is, from what I can tell, has been pretty well respected over the years.
I'd put this right up there with Inside Out, although I wasn't as a big a fan of it as everybody else was. But
yeah,
this one I fell asleep. It's not because the movie was bad, just been I'm in accounting and this is my busy time of the year. And I started it. My son finished it. My wife finished it. And I just passed out and I didn't have a reason to go back, unfortunately. didn't have a reason or time. But what I saw, I liked, and it looks good. It sounds good.
It's very thoughtful and humorous, but it's muted a little bit based off of, you know, what we're talking about. I guess as you know, the idea is that it's at its center, so it's not like a laugh riot, but it has enough of a big heart to make up for the lack of like big monstrous laughs.
That works for me. I mean, it sounds good, and I definitely will probably check it out again. My son does like to rewatch movies over and over and over again. My wife, on the other hand, does not. We'll get to that later on. Anything else on Soul before we move on?
I highly recommend it. I think it is among the upper tier of Pixar movies, and you know, Pixar doesn't miss.
Excellent. Stars Fall in Alabama.
Yes, Stars Fall in Alabama stars James Maslow, a former member of the Disney Channel series Big Time Rush, and a woman named Sierra Hanna. And this is a traditional romantic comedy. He's an Hollywood agent. She's a Hollywood star. He tells his friends back in his hometown in Alabama that they're dating, and she, for reasons that are all her own, decides that she'll willingly go back to his hometown in Alabama with him to pretend to be his date for a high school reunion. It's not the most original premise, obviously, but I gotta say there's a good deal of heart to this movie, which surprised me. You know, the cliches of romantic comedies are so desperately overdone and overly familiar to us all that we become immune to them, that we become like not just immune but like just ill from watching them. Like, it's just so recognizable. You can't help but roll your eyes. The thing you got to do with something like this is you're going to recycle well. And I guess this does recycle very well. She's Sierra Hanna's a really talented actress. She's really good at making you buy into a really dubious premise that she would willingly go along with this plot and pretend to be this guy's girlfriend. She has her reasons for doing it. The movie is actually, you know, thought about a lot of the things that you would talk about in terms of being plot holes. And she actually really throws herself into this rather dubious plot. And that's at least a slight twist on convention, which would usually have her be, you know, unaware or tricked or talked into it, dragging it, you know, kicking and screaming. This movie doesn't do that, which I was, I don't want to say I'm impressed by, but at least I was happy with that it didn't do that. It's just charming enough, I would say, is the best possible way I could put it. I found this movie just charming enough that it worked.
I skipped this one because I thought it looked shitty. that, and it was one. A little bit more expensive being a new release, so, which is fine. Nothing wrong with it. I'm glad to hear it's not as bad as I thought. It's more.
It looks really generic based off, yes, of that poster. It's like, it's not, it doesn't look great based off of that poster, I admit.
And then you read
it's not great.
But. Well, I know what you're saying, but then you read the IMDb, what it's about. And it seems more cliche than it probably is. And I don't know. I'm glad it's better than I gave it credit for.
it's a bit of a Lifetime movie. I can certainly admit that, but I enjoyed it way more than I ever would have expected to. So I got to give it credit.
That's good. All right, let's move on to one I did watch. I Blame Society. Yes.
I Blame Society is a pseudo documentary directed by Gillian Horvat and starring Gillian Horvat as Gillian Horvat, a struggling documentary filmmaker. She has this idea for a documentary that's based off of a supposed compliment she received from some friends who said she'd make a great serial killer. And she takes that to heart and starts to wonder, could I be a great serial killer? I don't know. So she starts to plot the perfect murder, and she decides that her perfect murder subject would be the girlfriend of a friend of hers. And this leads to them having a pretty major falling out, and they don't talk for several years. And then she gets the idea a couple of years later to return to this serial killer idea and begins filming some new stuff for it. And once again, sets her sights on this particular target. This movie is so, so good because it is ramping up this ridiculousness from the very beginning. She has such a unique energy as a character. She is so different than every other character going. I mean, it's like, I think I compared it to like if a Kristen Schaal character became Patrick Bateman. It was like, it's kind of, there's something there in that that I just adore, just the cleverness of that very notion, or a Christopher Guest character as a serial killer. Like, it's just, it's so ridiculous. And then when she actually starts plotting the perfect murder, and then she's pushing herself to try and discover how far she can go criminally, and she's, you know, starts by breaking into somebody's house, and actually she starts really small. She just starts with shoplifting, and that's so boring. She actually returns the item that she stole. So she starts with the, so she goes to breaking and entering, and then she's breaking and entering into somebody's house while they're there. And then from there, it just gets crazier and crazier. And I just love how crazy this movie gets. There's elements of sexism and revenge and such, but there's also just a lot of it is just basically her just being so different and so strange and so watchable. You can't take your eyes off of how ridiculous and brilliant she is. And I just adore this movie for going to these very dark and twisted places and being able to maintain a comic tone while doing it. And it's a very comic tone while she's doing these really horrible things. And it reminded me a little bit in that way of Night of the Virgin, which is one of my favorite movies. I love a movie that can pull off such a tricky tone of horror and comedy. It's just, I just adore this movie.
Yeah, it's very good. The main word, I mean, watchable is definitely the word I grab onto when you describe it. And those comic tones, it's not like you're laughing when she's doing stuff, but it makes it more comfortable while you're watching her do these horrible things, which is...
You're just, there's scenes where your jaw is on the floor. You can't believe what you're seeing because she's doing these things that are just so out there. And she's just so different though as a human being. Mm-hmm. She's just so different that it makes it oddly funny that this person is doing this.
And it's not like the things she's doing, they starts relatively light, and which shoplifting, I guess, that's about as light as it gets. And they just keep ramping it up throughout the whole movie. And then on top of that, the conversations she's having,
yes,
are the same. It's the same things happening. Each conversation gets more and more like awkward and uncomfortable. But because they're taking you away from what she's doing, it's almost like, I don't know. It's, I don't want to call it a letdown, like it's letting you breathe a little bit, but it's tricking you into a letdown only to get more awkward and uncomfortable. And it just gets more and more throughout the whole movie, and that's what's pretty fascinating about it. The documentary style probably will prevent it from being like this huge movie, but it definitely will have its audience. And she is,
I hope so.
Yeah, I mean, she is such a unique, cool character. And what's really even better about it is because it's her name, you don't really know where it begins. I mean, obviously the murdering.
That's the thing is that everybody in the movie is using their own name. Like all of her friends are using their real names in the movie. And that's that little extra kinky edge to this that is really so much fun, is that meta nature of it is so great. And it's all about, you know, the movie is about making a movie and about the scenes that she wants to get into the movie, and then as it just gets further and further along, it grows to such a crazy degree that once you reach the ending, you're just kind of in awe of the ability of this person to pull all this off and keep this very tricky tone that is just phenomenal, and it invites you to like her and then punches you for liking her. Like, oh, really? You like this character? You really like her? Well, this is what she's doing now.
Yeah, for me, it was more, I get what you're saying. It was more just like, I never got into that much where I was like, liked her, but I was definitely watching and I couldn't like take my eyes off of her. But I understand what you're saying. And like, there's scenes where she's like framing shots before she does things, which is just, it's creepy. You know, when last week when we were doing our best of, you know, I had Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer, and there's for the 1990 year. And there's things where they do that are really, when they do it in that movie, it's terrifying. I hear the way that comic tone gives you just enough ease to watch it and still be disturbed by it, but able to keep your eyes on the screen. And even like from the, as soon as she starts breaking and entering at that point, there's this level of tension that, if it ended it with that's as bad as it got, and she, or maybe she broke in when people were there and that's as bad as it got, it'd still be a pretty terrifying, uncomfortable movie, and it keeps going. But it's definitely worth checking out. Right now, it's I watched it via some online theater. Mm-hmm. Hopefully it's available to everybody else soon. But it's, I don't know, I definitely recommend it. Does this count as a 2020 movie or a 2021?
I'm counting it as 2021, so I think it's going to be, it's going to be on my year-end list, like, already. Like, I'm already thinking about it right now, and I love this movie. This is the kind of movie that's going to stick around for me for a long time, because it's just that exciting and different and strange and weird and funny and dark. It's got all the elements that I love.
My wife was having
the audaciousness of it.
Yeah, she was having anxiety issues yesterday, like panic attacky stuff. I was like, "Hey, you want to watch this?" And we watched the trailer. She's like, "I don't know if I can handle that right now." So I had to watch it on my phone. But it was, I actually watched it this morning before I recorded. But it's so good, and I can't wait to. For everybody else to see it. It's definitely the best of 2021 so far.
Oh yeah. I've seen 15 movies this year already, so
this is technically the only one I've seen. But even, I mean, it definitely will, you're right, at worst it would be on the honorable mention list, but I could see this, because of its originality and uniqueness, I could see this sticking around to a top 10 list, depending on how great this year is.
I'm not going to forget this movie anytime soon, because I had such a blast watching it. It reminded me of a movie that came out a couple years ago called Daddy Issues, which nobody saw. But I still think that movie is goddamn brilliant, just because it's so weird and kinky and strange. And that's definitely, this movie is weird and kinky and strange. And you've got to be on its wavelength to be with this movie, and I definitely was. It's just right up my alley in terms of that, because you get tired, and I know a lot of it has to do with being tired of just mainstream plots and overly familiar stuff. I start to crave the weird and the strange and the different, and this is weird and strange and different, but it's also really, really good. It a lot of it kind of reminded me also of Peeping Tom.
Yeah,
that brilliant Powell movie, and that element of it as well, thinking about that movie and thinking about this movie together, that'd make a hell of a double feature.
Well, and you do got to be on its wavelength, but I think it does do a good job of helping you get there. You know, some movies don't care if you can get there. You know, we like Hereditary, one of our favorite movies a couple of years ago. There's a point in that movie where they take a turn and he knows he lost half the audience, but he doesn't give a shit. This one does a pretty good job of keeping you, or there's no turn, it just builds, but this does a good job of getting you on the wavelength. It's not going to get everybody because of the documentary style and the uniqueness of it, but for the most part, I think it's going to get more people if they were to watch it. Then
yeah, you know, give it a chance. I mean, please give this movie a chance. It's just so very, very good.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. Is this any good? Shadow in the Cloud.
Shadow in the Cloud stars Chloe Grace Moretz, and this is a weird story about a kind of a mysterious girl who finds her way onto a World War II ship in New Zealand, plane in New Zealand. Franklin with a secret. She's a bag with her that has something secret inside of it, and she's playing, you know, fast and loose with the rules here. She's telling them that she's also an airman, even though they're like, "You're a woman in 1943. This is kind of, I know they're out there, but this is kind of weird for us." And then she's, her lie is kind of quickly playing out. It has to play out very quickly because they have to eventually let her on the plane and they keep her on, something starts to happen to the plane, and it's a gremlin, an actual like gremlin is attacking the plane, and they can't really see it and they don't really believe that that's what it is, but she can see it. She gets on the plane. They stick her in the bottom of the plane in the gun bubble, essentially, that's underneath this World War II plane, and it's just basically plexiglass that she can see pretty much everywhere, and she's got a gun so she can shoot if she has to, but she's basically just, she can see everything around her, and she sees this gremlin tearing away at the plane, and she's on the headset with them yelling back and forth trying to tell them that this is what's happening, and they're all still kind of wondering about what her backstory is, and they've, this bag that she was carrying, they've kept it up with them, because she didn't want it down there with her in this, you know, glass plexiglass bubble for whatever reason. And they're kind of wanting to open it up, but she's telling them that they can't, that there's this, it's a top secret, and then she's got top secret clearance for it or whatever. The amazing thing about this is that Chloe Grace Moretz is doing all this, and she's basically alone for 80% of the movie in this bubble. And it's just her and basically you can kind of see the gremlin every now and again pop up, and then it's her dealing with the crew and having this conversation where her lie continues to have to evolve and change and become something else in order to try and keep them at bay. And then you've got the gremlin who is, you know, sabotaging the plane all the while, and it's really exciting and really smart, and I was surprised that so many people kind of reviewed this negatively, because Chloe Grace Moretz is really, really great in this, and the acting challenge that she pulls off of being just alone in this one spot in the plane for so long is amazing. It's just it's a really an acting trick that not many people could pull off, to be that compelling by yourself and just with the, you know, dialogue and some action and in this one spot. It's really good. I really enjoyed this a lot, and it's got some really great catharsis at the end. The ending is very clever. I really dig this movie, actually.
You've kind of sold me on it. It's $20 right now to rent, so I didn't. But when I'm trying to find pictures to, you know, what we're doing on YouTube, where you can see what we were talking about, there was a lot of like screenshots of her looking really stupid. So I don't know if people were just, cause you know, it sounds like a movie where she's scared and, you know, reacting and, you know, I don't know. And I don't think that's fair to, you know, this type of performance and what she's doing. And I don't know if that plays a role in it or not. The fact that it's January and they just automatically dismiss it. But it definitely sounds, interesting.
I think the January thing does play a role. January's got the worst reputation for movie releases, and this got released, in theaters in January. So that's obviously, it was the first movie of the year. It was actually released over the New Year's weekend, which is, unique. Not many filmmakers want to do that. Not many movie studios want to put movies out on the first day of the year, but they did. And I don't know how well it did, but
I'd never heard of this movie till you told me we were going to review it. But no, I'm definitely on board now. I want to give it a shot when it's a little bit cheaper. And I probably would have gone to the theater to see it this weekend if it was no COVID going on. A few more months. We're almost there.
Yes.
You picked a good year not to have to drive up my driveway either. That first snow, that first snow was so wet. While I'm plowing it, it froze. So there's like one little tiny lane. There's no way. Like, thank God I have four-wheel drive, or there's no two-wheel drive cars getting up that driveway right now. So no DoorDash for me. Let's see. Let me hit the fun button. Oh, there was one thing back to I Blame Society. This is just more me making fun of you as a joke. I took your review and took a screenshot of it.
Yeah.
You'd what you compared it to a Christopher Guest character played by Christian Schaal meets Ted Bundy instead of Patrick Bateman. And then this is totally out of context. So this is just fun to... it says Ted Bundy, a cold-blooded but quirky killer whose knack for criminal behavior was a childlike has a childlike glee that is darkly hilarious and deeply disturbing. I cut all the other stuff out, but it's a great little. I was going to text it to you, and then I forgot, and I just happened to remember when you said the way you were comparing it. Anyway, let's move on to the classic.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event for the linear, legitimate, and universally recognized, undisputed classic.
Sorry, did you stop me?
I don't. You probably can't hear the music, but I was playing the.
Oh no!
So go ahead.
Oh, sorry.
You're back though.
Absence of Malice. Stars Sally Field and Paul Newman. The story of a man who has some mafia ties in his history. His father was essentially a gangster, and he becomes a suspect, or at least a person of interest, in the disappearance of a union head in Florida in 1980. He becomes part of the case when Sally Field, as a reporter, discovers that the Department of Justice task force looking into the murder begin to look into him, and she finds out about it. She finds out about it because they want her to. They want her to find out about it and write about it to put some pressure on this guy to speak to them and give them information, because they figure he must know something considering his ties in the past with his father. It turns out he has no interest in this. He has no mob ties anymore other than being related to them. But he's really a legit guy who runs a legit business. And that's basically it. He just claims that this newspaper is out to destroy his life. And he wants to know why. And he wants to know why the Department of Justice is after him, which is pretty obvious why that is. I gotta say, I was disappointed in this movie again, and I'm gonna start coming off like I hate Paul Newman. I don't, but I don't understand what Sidney Pollack was going for with this. I don't understand what he was trying to do with Paul Newman's characterization. Paul Newman's character acts so suspicious throughout the entire movie. Like, here he is trying to prove that he's an innocent man who's been wrongfully accused and is being wrongfully drawn into this murder plot. And he just acts as suspiciously as possible. Like, he's just a total jerk to everybody. And I get it. He's upset that he got dragged into this, but never at any point does he actually want to say, no, I didn't do it. I mean, I guess he kind of does, but he's such a jerk about it the whole time. He doesn't seem like he's at all concerned about being the subject of a murder case. He's just kind of annoyed, and he just wants to get back to doing his job. And Sally Field, on the other hand, is one of the worst reporters ever in a movie. She's going to have sex with this guy like right off the bat. Like, she's really ready. She's DTF. I know, again, it's Paul Newman, I understand, but she's just, that's the ethical lines that she's already ready to cross right away just totally put me off. I've managed to go several years and a decade, I would say, in journalism without having sex with anybody I'm reporting on. It's not that hard, actually, it turns out. This movie is not bad. I mean, obviously everybody involved is incredibly talented, and Sidney Pollack is a very good director, but I think maybe it's just the changing times, or I don't know. There's something about this that the characterization of Paul Newman's character just didn't make any sense to me. At no point does he just stop acting so suspicious, dude. Just stop being so suspicious. He's always like really creepy, kind of. He's always kind of, I know he's going to be standoffish and angry. I understand that. But then he starts enacting this plot to get revenge on people without killing them. And is this really, is this easier than just trying, just saying, I didn't do it?
Yeah. I'm of two minds. In 1981, I'm sure this was great. It definitely doesn't age well. The realistic qualities of it aren't that's really what the problem is, all the realism that's lacking. But you put yourself back in 81, Paul Newman just being a cool guy in general. Here he is trying to screw over everybody that got him involved in this thing in the first place, get them all in trouble, and he... No, it's not easier to do what he does, but it, in the end, it does kind of fuck him all over, and not necessarily in a fun way, you know, like a Bugs Bunny type thing, but it's...
Right.
But it's still... it's in its own little Paul Newman lane, I guess, if you will. So,
just so it's just so begrudging the way he's in the movie. He's like, fine, I'll do this. Fine, I'll do this. And it's not the character doing that. It's him. It's him. Like, he just doesn't even, like, he doesn't even want to be doing this. Like, he's so in method that he just wants to bottle beer. Like, that's just so much in the method that he's in. Like, I just want to get back to this guy's everyday life. I don't really care about your plot. And I'll just go along with that because I'm in the movie.
And but to that, his character is, because he's in the movie, he's yes, that's what he wants to do, everyday life, and they've drawn him into this, you know, I guess he's related to gangsters, or his father was somehow
a gangster,
or affiliated at worst, or at best. Either way, I don't know, he's so annoyed that he wants to get back to real life that he just goes, you know what, fuck all of you. And and it's, again, it plays, it's watchable. You have everybody involved is very good at what they do. So they've made a watchable movie out of a movie that does not stand the test of time. So if nothing else, you got, you know, it works on that level. But again, you have to be in 1981 for it to work.
Yeah. The big central point, the big turning point in this movie involves Sally Field publishing a story from Paul Newman's friend, and it ended up that she has an alibi for him that he was with her on the night of the murder because he took her to get an abortion. And Sally Field publishes this story, and I was watching the scene where she and her editor are having this back and forth about publishing this story, and there's just no way I would have published this story. I mean, as a journalist, I would never have published that story based off of that. I never would have done it. And I don't think most people would have done it. I think this was an absolute, each story that she reported really was kind of not just shady, but just outright wrong. Like the first story that she reports, where she just steals the report right off the FBI guy's desk. Granted that he wants her to do that, but still, it's like she's so bad at her job that she gets pushed around by everybody. Everybody pushes her around. She ends up getting somebody killed, and she still ends up sleeping with Paul Newman after that. And I'm like, I don't buy into any of this.
And the fact that the only way this movie even halfway works in 1981 is by putting a female in that character, that lead, instead of a male, because they think a woman will be more sympathetic and she'll have a conscience. And that is disturbing watching that in 2021. That said, I guess my take on it was they act like all these characters would have morals and none of them would. You know, that first story definitely would have been published by any journalist. Maybe not you, but most journalists will, you know, a lot of them like will stand in a fucking hurricane to be on the air. So, I mean, I'm not gonna, there's definitely a group of people that would have done it. The second one probably wouldn't have even happened. And then if they, I don't know, because they don't, when they do accuse somebody, the next, you know, when Pete Townsend got accused of pedophilia, there was no story clearing him. It was buried in like the 15th page in the corner, you know, but when he got accused of it, it was the headline on Rolling Stone magazine and everywhere else.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's usually how it works. And they tried to add a little morals to where there's not. And not just the media, the FBI, everybody else involved, they're trying to, they all had just enough of a conscience to keep the story going, but none of those things would have happened. and then you throw in the fact that you have to have Sally Field in the role, which, again, she's not bad. It's just a bad character that definitely doesn't age well 40 years later.
Well, I mean, Olivia Wilde just played this character in that Richard Jewell movie where they assassinated her character by having her be, you know, sleeping with her sources.
Right. But this is beyond the sleeping with her sources part. That part, you're right. But there's more to it, this character, than that. But even then, it's they keep, like, everybody's giving her information that she feels bad for the people she's accused. So she feels she gets duped. So she goes and it's all.
There's no redemption for her. That's the shitty part, is that she doesn't get redeemed. She doesn't. She never looks good. She never finds out anything. She gets duped all the way, and we're supposed to be following her in this story, and she just looks like an idiot the entire time. And that's not her fault. That's the movie making her look stupid by advancing the plot that way, because they want the plot to service Newman's character.
The best thing about this movie is the end when Wilford Brimley comes
in. Wilford Brimley.
And yep. Talks about how bad this movie is. Because he's pretty much saying what we're doing. He's tearing down all these characters. And in a way, maybe that saves the movie for me a little bit, because that's basically the end. But he pops in, he just tears them all down one at a time. With the exception of Newman. I mean, he kind of does Newman, but Newman,
right,
really, he was a mastermind in the end. That kind of, it almost like he was here on the podcast talking about the movie.
his manner is great. He's pissed off, and he's just annoyed with all these people and you're wasting my time. Like, I could be doing something else right now.
He may have never been better than that scene.
Yes. Yes. I agree.
I mean, I don't necessarily wish anybody to sit through it to get to it.
Right.
But maybe watch the trailer. I don't know. Read a couple of reviews and then get to it. It's worth watching that scene, but you need the context, I guess. But, I mean, I think it's a good movie, 1981. It definitely, it remains watchable, but it's hard to not sit there and question things throughout. I think even in 81, you're questioning some of the things she does. I read Ebert's review, and he goes, he gave it a positive review. He didn't care. Right. But he definitely noticed it and questioned it, because you don't have people just going, oh, here, I feel bad. Here's a little bit of evidence. Give it to a reporter, which happens like four times in this movie. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's Absence of Malice. you can watch it if you want. It's on Amazon.
I do like Paul Newman. I do.
He's such a charismatic guy that he makes things better than they could be, but he has yet to. But he's also, he commands so much attention that, like, when he was with Hitchcock, it's hard to let Newman almost distracts Hitchcock from being Hitchcock, or he's so good at what he does that he can't be great because he's Paul Newman. If that makes any sense. You know, if he was able to work with Tarantino, he would just he would be a distraction. I mean, maybe not, but you know what I'm saying? He worked with some great directors, and you just have this cool guy, and that's really what Paul Newman is. And that's why, like, the Sting and Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, you know, are considered as better movies of Vertigo. He's just a cool guy, and it's distracting from the filmmaking. But he is likable.
I think you need to see HUD. I think that's the movie that I think people have talked about the most as his best movie. And I've never seen it.
I've never seen it, but I know he's done Cool Hand Luke. That's always one I've heard as his best. But again, it's just him being cool for 3 hours.
Yeah, it is.
And then the Lifetime original, Not Without My Daughter.
Now, it came out this week 30 years ago.
Yes.
I mean, interesting premise. A woman who's married to an Iranian man at the time of the fall of the Shah, and she's got to try and get out of the country and escape from her abusive husband, played by Alfred Molina. And it's very dramatic. And she's trying to leave the country with a child that is, you know, Iranian born. And obviously that's not going to be very easy for an American woman to do. And that's the real, that's the crux of the story here. And it's a very dramatic notion, and Sally Field is quite good at that.
Yeah, I showed my wife the trailer, and I was showing my daughter it as well. because this trailer played over and over again when it came out. And yeah. so much so that I, up to this day, not without my daughter, is something that sticks in my head. That not often, but enough that probably at least once a year that phrase pops in the back of my head. Because I've seen this trailer so many times.
Anytime you take your daughter somewhere, not without my daughter.
Don't say it, just think it. And I laughed to myself. Because it's not like Batman or Lethal Weapon memorable, but it stuck around enough that it's just with me. And my wife's watching the trailer and she's like, I've seen this movie. And I'm like, okay. I mean, and she likes to argue with me when I say she hasn't seen movies, but she thinks she has. But regardless, this trailer tells you the whole movie.
Yeah.
And
do they make it out?
Right. Yes, they do. It's a true story on top of that. I lost my sharing. Sorry. It's a true story. But it's such a dumb title. Sally Field, as great as an actor as she is, she's distracting in the role. You almost need an unknown or another level down of a popularity actress. And then my wife was like, and I remember following the story when it happened from real life. I'm like, it happened in 84. You were 4 years old. There's no way. And she's like, maybe I've seen the Lifetime movie. I'm like, no, that would be this movie if you saw it at all. But anyway, I think a different title and a lesser known actress makes this more of a, it could be a, you know, potentially a great movie. I don't know. It's just so cheesy looking in the trailer and my memory.
Cheesy looking in that poster.
Whew. Yep. Speaking of cheese, Lionheart starring Jean-Claude Van Damme.
I am almost embarrassed how much I enjoyed this movie. not like Ninja Turtles good, but like this movie, there's something weirdly amazingly wholesome about this movie that I just adore. It's so weird. So the premise is that Van Damme is a prisoner of the French Foreign Legion for reasons. His brother is into drugs. His brother is in Los Angeles, and his brother gets burned alive by drug dealers, and he has to escape from the French Foreign Legion and make his way to Los Angeles to get to see his brother one last time before he dies. And along the way, to get there, he gets on a ship to New York. Then has to get from New York to Los Angeles. He discovers this underground fighting thing that's happening, essentially bum fights. And he gets involved in this guy kind of adopts him and becomes his manager. And all along the way, Van Damme is just really just very sweet and kind. And then he kicks people's ass and then he's kind again. And he's all of this. He's this way throughout the entire movie. Anytime something is happening, he's just the sweetest person. And then he's able to harm people desperately with his hands. And he gets into these series of bum fights with an ever escalating amount of money being paid by rich people who have this underground fighting league that goes essentially nationwide. And he's able to fight his way from New York to Los Angeles to see his brother. But his brother is dead when he gets there. And then he's got to deal with the French Foreign Legion guys who are still chasing him. And then he's involved in with this gangster woman who wants to sleep with him, who he just totally rejects out of hand, no matter what she does. And again, there's this weird sort of wholesomeness to him that is just really appealing. I like just he's just so very moral and ethical. He beats the shit out of a guy and then he helps him back up. He beats up a guy at a pool, like the guy laying unconscious in the pool, so he drags him out, you know, to make sure he doesn't drown. Like, he's a sweet guy.
Is this the movie where I think Hot Shots Part 2 parodied it, where they're like sticking their hands in glass and stuff, or is that another Van Damme?
That's Bloodsport.
Bloodsport. Okay. It's another fighting ring movie. Yeah, I mean, Van Damme made a lot of the same movies over and over again. I thought they were all fairly watchable and fun-ish, but they started to blend into one another, so I can't necessarily tell the difference.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. But I got into a text thread with my sister just telling her things about this movie that were just weird. There's a scene early on in one of his early fights where he's watching a fight and two guys are beating the hell out of each other. And one guy punched the other guy and his blood goes all over this woman in the crowd. And the woman does this thing where she touches the blood that's on her chest and then she licks it. And I just about threw up. I almost threw up in that moment. And she's trying to be sexy while she's doing it. Like, she takes the blood and then touches her finger to her tongue. And it's like, and she's looking at Van Damme like he's supposed to think that's hot. It's like, no, you've got a fucking disease now. No. What are you doing?
Did they fuck later on or no?
No. Oh. She never comes back in the movie. There's also a makeover montage in this movie that is absolutely hilarious. Once Van Damme arrives in Los Angeles, his backer, the female gangster, wants him to look the part. So she buys him a bunch of suits and they have a rockin' song playing the entire time. It's a fucking makeover montage in this movie.
That's funny.
Oh, yeah. It was entertaining. I was very entertained by this.
And then Ski School. I swear to God, this is the same movie we talked about a year ago. And if I'm looking at everything,
I think it feels like it, right?
Well, I think it actually is. I think either Wikipedia forgot to delete it off. Because everywhere I went said 1990. But it's definitely on Wikipedia. It's 1991. But it's also in the 1991.
Well, we don't need to talk about this again.
It was disappointing, is all I remember. It wasn't fun enough. The cover's misleading.
Well, there are a lot of boobs in the movie.
Oh, did you watch it? Oh, then maybe it wasn't. The one last year didn't have any. So maybe it is a different movie.
This has a lot of boobs in it. There's a lot of nakedness in this movie. Dean Cameron is the star, plays the kind of Bugs Bunny character who's always kind of motor mouthing his way in and out of trouble. He's the party starter, you know, shows up at this swanky place and turns it into a rockin' party, that kind of thing. And he's kind of funny at times, but the bottom line on this is that movie that people watch and go, oh, they couldn't make that movie again today. They couldn't make that movie again. Like, look, they did there. Like, it's a really homophobic scene. We got a lot of topless women in the movie. They couldn't make that movie today. And I'm like, fuck you. The only reason they can't make this movie today is because it's terrible. This isn't canceled culture. No one's canceling Ski School because it's got boobs. They're canceling it because it's bad.
Yeah. I mean, there's, right. Nothing wrong with gratuitous nudity whenever he's on board with it. There's nothing wrong
exactly.
with it.
Watch your porn at home alone like you're supposed to.
Have you ever seen this movie or the TV show Brockmire?
No.
Actually, the Lionheart's what made me think of it, but then this is just more that reminds me. Jason Mollett, Jason from New Mexico, sent me a message the other day. He used to be a listener. He might still be, I don't know. Saying, I just watched a show I'd never heard of and I immediately thought of you. It's about baseball and podcasting. And at one point in it, his producer, he carries his producer into the studio. They're running late. He's covered in blood and they're like, he got in a car accident, but it wasn't his blood. Blood splattered all over him. And he kept falling in and rolling all over. And the lady was really grossed out by it. And there's a lot of watching porn in it. Or he is hates the internet. He's got, I don't know. You should watch it. It's very good. It's on Hulu. Right. Hank Azaria is fantastic in it, and Amanda Peet's pretty fun as well. I guess that's our show. Be sure to check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/criticspod, to help support the podcast. We will be adding an I Spit on Your Grave bonus episode that will eventually be released to everybody, probably at least a month from now. But you'll get it there early on Patreon. And then our TeePublic page at IHateCritics.net. Click on the TeePublic link and get yourself a shirt or a pillow or a magnet or a coffee mug or whatever you want. I don't have any TeePublic stuff up here other than Cousin Jeff's Hereditary mug. I can't really see the light in my hand.
That's awesome.
But I'm drinking out of one of his other mugs. But yeah, TeePublic, search Everyone's a Critic podcast, movie review podcast, and you'll find our stuff. I can throw up some flick chart real quick if you'd like.
Sure.
If I can find it. Safari. There we go. All right. Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, Mission to Mars.
Indiana Jones.
Sure. The Hateful Eight, The Craft.
The Hateful Eight.
Bicentennial Man, Old Boy.
Old Boy.
U-571, I Love You, Man.
I Love You, Man.
Godzilla 1998, Saw 2.
Saw 2.
101 Dalmatians 1996, Chasing Amy.
Chasing Amy.
At some point we'll find one to disagree on. Vera Drake, Jurassic Park.
Jurassic Park.
Top Gun, Mary Poppins.
Mary Poppins.
Creed. Parenthood, Drive.
Drive.
The A-Team, The Abyss.
The Abyss.
The Muppets Take Manhattan, Pocahontas.
Muppets.
All right, I don't have an opinion, so. super bad Euro trip.
Super bad. I have a real soft spot for Euro trip, though.
Yeah. Hugo, Star Wars Episode 2, Attack of the Clones.
Hugo.
Agreed. Scream 2, Pulp Fiction.
Pulp Fiction, yeah.
Gandhi, I Love You, Beth Cooper.
My Pulp Fiction are 30-second favorite. controversial choice. I'm going to take I Love You, Beth Cooper, just because Gandhi is just interminable to me.
I've never seen it. Don't really want to. Nowhere
I've
Boys?
I've never seen Nowhere Boys. No idea what that is.
Gandhi Speed 2 Cruise Control.
What is it about Gandhi that they want us to vote for? Fine, Gandhi, you can have it. You win.
Now stop Jesus. Popping up. Coyote,
exactly.
Coyote Ugly Downfall.
Memes or Piper Perabo? That's the question. I like Coyote Ugly a lot, so I'm going to vote for that.
I've never seen
I'd watch Downfall. That first.
Is Downfall really? Good?
You've seen the meme. You've seen the meme.
I just don't know I have.
The Hitler meme. 99999. You never seen that? Really?
I mean, I've heard that. I've never, no. Trekkies, American Assassin. Two movies Trekkies. I don't care about. Wreck-It Ralph, There Will Be Blood.
Ooh, that's a good one. There we go. There Will Be Blood.
I gotta find.
I love Wreck-It Ralph.
Fucking quarter. Hold on. Let's see if it's in the Bible. Not everything has made its way upstairs yet, so I got it here somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay. The mug. Nope, not that one. I'm just going to flip this memory card over. And There Will Be Blood wins, but I choose Wreck-It Ralph. Brick, Harry Potter, and the Chamber of Secrets.
Brick.
I agree. Teenage Ninja Turtles 2. Secret of the Ooze. We'll get to that one later.
We'll get to
or Dune.
Dune, I think. Maybe. It's been a while.
Sure. The Mission, Friday the 13th.
The Mission.
I'm sure it's better. I've still got to go with Friday the 13th. My first horror movie I've ever seen. And you win. Mission Impossible 3, Touch.
I don't remember Touch.
Neither do I. Twins, Mission Impossible 3.
Mission Impossible 3.
Flip it. And you win again. Star Trek, The Voyage Home, which is part 4. Home Alone.
Home Alone.
Greed. Natural Born Killers, Beavis and Butthead, Do America.
Beavis and Butthead.
I definitely watched that one first.
Oh.
I should just call Natural Born Killers cocaine. The Craft. Well, something happened. Bad Rap. Mad Max Fury Road.
Never heard of it.
Mad Max is the greatest action movie of all time. You've never heard of that?
Ooh, I love The Day the Earth Stood Still, but yeah, I'll go Mad Max.
Wow. People would be surprised 4 years ago or whatever when Mad Max came out that you choose that over another good movie.
I don't hate it. I've never hated it.
I'm just making fun of that reputation. Live Free or Die Hard while you were sleeping.
While you were sleeping.
Looper, Monster versus Aliens.
Looper.
Yeah. Judge Dredd, The Village.
The Village.
Agreed. Drive, Step Brothers.
Drive. Oh, Step Brothers, I hate.
I love Drive. Three Men and a Baby, As Good as It Gets.
As Good as It Gets, until I watch it again. I have a feeling about that movie.
Is this a movie?
Batman 66, yeah.
Or Platoon?
It's Platoon, I guess. But Batman 66 is a lot of fun.
Yeah, maybe. I've never seen it clearly, but I love Platoon.
That
Thing You Do, Arachnophobia, That Thing You Do, definitely. Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, Red Eye.
Red Eye is a really great movie. I'll take Indiana Jones, but Red Eye is a really great movie.
I agree. Wish it was The Last Crusade so we didn't have to choose that. Starship Troopers, Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle.
Harold and Kumar. Well, everything you do in Harold and Kumar makes Starship Troopers a lot better.
That is true. Das Boot, Heavyweights.
Das Boot.
Spider-Man 2, The Good Shepherd.
Spider-Man 2.
Yeah. Boogie Nights, Stuck on You.
Boogie Nights.
Agreed. Avatar, Camera?
I've not seen Camera. I know it's a Godzilla movie, but
Avatar, Night at the Museum, Battle of the Smithsonian.
Avatar. Begrudgingly.
The Day the Earth Stood Still, Hellraiser, Inferno.
Oh, see, if it were the other The Day the Earth Stood Still because Keanu's in it.
The Proposal, Don't Look Now.
The Proposal.
Was that the one we watched last year?
Yeah, yeah.
Dr. Doolittle, The Last House on the Left.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Which one's more torture? Don't know what to do here.
I'm going Last House because it has more of an indie spirit than Dr. Doolittle does.
Sure, okay. I'll let you have that one.
Men in Black
3. I voted for Fishing with Gandhi.
Men in Black 3, Doom.
The only time Men in Black 3 could win anything is this.
Drag Me to Hell, I Love You, Man.
I Love You, Man.
It's harder for me, but I agree. Avengers, Infinity War, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, 2011.
I didn't love Infinity War, did I?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't remember.
Yeah. A Girl with a Dragon Tattoo.
Sure. I wish Fincher wouldn't have done it, but it's good.
He's still Fincher.
Right. Just the original held up just fine. Three Men and a Baby, Flubber.
Three Men and a Baby.
Agreed. Gross Point Blank, The Big Lebowski. Thank you,
Big Lebowski.
Love when Gross Point Blank loses. Oh, this will be a fun one for you. Moonraker, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
I hate both of them.
I know. That's why it's a lot. Fun. Or are you just deferring to me?
Go ahead. You can have this one.
Christmas Vacation. Ghostbusters 2 or The Birds?
The Birds.
Yes. The Revenant, Garden State.
I would watch Garden State. I don't want to watch Revenant ever again. Not that I don't respect it and love it. I do respect it, and I think it's great, but I don't want to watch it again.
Yeah. I do think it's better, though, so I'll flip it. Hey, I won one. Which I mean, I like Garden State. Don't get me wrong. All right, last one. Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Angels in the Outfield.
Texas Chainsaw.